atop the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Oregon labor unions march in support of Occupy Portland. Cops chase a man from Tigard to Vancouver. And Rick Perry now says he was just kidding, really, about believing all that birther stuff.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, October 27th, 2011. SWAT officers surrounded a Clark County home Wednesday morning, then left after being unable to find a man chased by police earlier along I-5 from Tigard to Vancouver. The suspect was identified as Sergio Hunt, 25, wanted by Tigard police on a domestic abuse case. The vehicle's registration came back to a home at 4913 Northeast 55th Street. Early Wednesday afternoon, officers began searching for Hunt in the Tigard area. During a standoff in Vancouver, officers used bullhorns for about 90 minutes, asking people inside the home to come out. Once they were out, tear gas was lobbed into the home. It was unclear whether the occupants knew where the suspect was, so the neighborhood was kept secure by police. Police then used a robot to help determine that the home was empty.
How do you mean?
I don't know. They had a robot.
Did they just figure that if you saw a robot coming in the front door, you'd be sufficiently terrified that you'd just run out the front or the back or the...
Well, yeah, it was like RoboCop.
Holy God!
He said in RoboCop.
Okay.
Hunt, Hunt was a nephew of those living in the home. In a KGW interview, the relatives pleaded with the suspect to turn himself into police. They also said that they felt the police treated them as suspects. What with the tear gas lobbing and all, I would say so.
And the robot and the marching.
Yeah.
The driver initially had managed to shake the officers pursuing him, even after passing over a spike strip at I-5 and 4th Plain. He was a suspect in a Washington County abuse case. The nature of his actions in Washington County prompted the sheriff's office to call up the SWAT unit. A portion of the investigation involved the Tigard police.
I like the fact that we have a unit that's actually a verb, that there is, in fact, a SWAT unit.
SWAT.
You know, which I guess is somewhat after the spank unit, but before the stab unit
like
gets called.
Smackdown Patrol.
Exactly.
That would be a good name.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, October 27th, 2011. Thank you for drawing near on this weekday. Dawn's picking her teeth right now, just in case you're wondering about that.
So that my sounds come out delightful and clean.
No. I'm just saying in case anybody wanted to play the home game. If they wanted to sort of act along with Dawn, they could just sort of... Right into the... Anyway, coming up later in this hour, your entertainment news, also science in the march. You want to get this program later in the day, you can do that via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download. Yes?
Well, you make a point of saying this thing about, like, me picking the thing out of my teeth. Like you're, like, completely exempt from doing anything annoying ever. And then you immediately start cracking your knuckles.
Well, yeah.
I'm just
it's my leitmotif. And blah, 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 direct MP3 download, yada, yada, blah, 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 mobile.cascadia.fm. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Members of the Oregon labor unions gathered at Director Park Southeast in Southeast Portland on Wednesday in support of the Occupy movement. Hundreds marched during the evening commute from Director's Park to Pioneer Courthouse Square. Protester Avery Roper says protesters are catching cabin fever as they brace for the coming cold weather. Roper says protesters are on the edge, but doesn't elaborate what that actually means.
The edge of...
I don't know.
Insanity? The edge of wetness?
They're like becoming like all the guys in John Carpenter's The Thing, and they just start turning on each other.
It's like Dust Boot down there.
Portland Mayor's Office spokeswoman Amy Ruiz says the city is evaluating the protest daily and would not say what would motivate the city to forcibly evict the estimated 300 protesters who have camped in two downtown park squares. A statement from Occupied Portland members said Wednesday's march was an effort to engage the city and the media in the mission. The statement said American citizens have been forced into the streets in reaction to the outrageous influence of corporate money throughout our political system, local, state, and federal and the failure of our policymakers to hold it in check, we urge our local media to engage with the leaders of thought in both the unions as well as the various elements of Occupy Portland in order to begin a real dialogue throughout our state concerning how Oregon itself has been deeply injured by Wall Street and corporate America. To engage with the leaders of thought.
Yeah, that doesn't really mean anything.
The activists settled into Chapman and Lansdale Square parks after their initial march earlier this month. Organizers estimate as many as 500 people have been living there.
When did everybody at the park start talking like they were on trial with Socrates, you know?
Well, it's really only one or two guys. I think it's Le Pew or whatever his name is.
Le Pew.
And then this guy.
Okay.
Fed up with Occupy Wall Street cell encampments across the country, police in cities around the U.S. are increasingly cracking down on protesters who refuse to vacate public spaces. More than 100 were arrested in Oakland on Tuesday, and 53, including a state senator, were rounded up in Atlanta. Those raids, along with others in smaller cities across the country this week, have brought the total number arrested in Occupy protests nationwide to between 1,500 and 2,000, according to the Los Angeles Times.
Why, that is 1%. Oh, wait, no. No, it's not.
About half of those arrests have been in New York, while the other half have been spread far and wide. Many of the rest have come in cities that had earlier said they would tolerate the protests. And Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed has issued an executive order allowing the demonstrators to stay. But then he revoked it this week amid what he said were escalating security concerns. In Baltimore, meanwhile, city officials declared on Tuesday that overnight camping is illegal in the plaza where protesters have been camping for 3 weeks. The city didn't say exactly when or whether activists would be kicked out, but they did say it's not legal. So basically warning them at some point there will be a confrontation.
So even in Baltimore at some point they said, look, we're going to have to enforce some of these laws some of the time. I mean, you know, really, after 3 weeks, we're just going to have to do it, even sporadically.
And a top cleric at the famous St. Paul's Cathedral in London resigned Thursday in support of the Occupy protests taking place in front of his church. Giles Fraser, the church's canon chancellor, announced via Twitter that he was stepping down with great regret and sadness. He had split with church leaders over demonstrators' right to camp out in front of the cathedral as part of the Occupy London Stock Exchange protests, one of several offshoots of New York's Occupy Wall Street protests that have sprung up around the world. Fraser backed the protesters, asking police to leave them alone when they first congregated on the cathedral steps 2 weeks ago. But St. Paul's Dean, Graham Knowles, closed the church on Friday, citing safety concerns, and asked the protesters to leave. According to CNN, he said the cathedral is consulting lawyers on possible legal measures to evict the demonstrators. Fraser told the Guardian newspaper his conscience dictated that he resign rather than participate in such evictions. He said, I cannot support using violence to ask people to clear off the land. It is not about my sympathies or what I believe about the camp. I support the right to protest, and in a perfect world, we would have negotiated. But our legal advice was that this would have implied consent.
By the way, I support violence for almost everything. Seriously, the next time a guy's trying to ticket me downtown, like some meter maid is rolling by in his little three-wheeled ice cream fine-o-meter, you know, his fine-mobile, if I could crowbar that guy right there and get away with it, no doubt.
You can't get away with that, though.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's
people
like,
have tried.
I support it as a theoretical end to almost all problems.
So intellectually, you're always doing violence.
Yeah,
like inside your head.
If I were just taller, maybe. Or could do hard time. I don't think I can jail, though. I'm not the type. Hey, since I sense the whole Occupy, you know, your city here thing is coming to an end, and so I have to get rid of all these ideas now while I have a chance. This is something I wrote down like a week ago, and then we didn't get a chance because I was talking about Doritos. So I had this great idea. This was, I have it labeled, this was brilliant idea number two for, I think, last Tuesday. And so, because the Occupy guys seem to be occupying a lot of the headlines as well, they seem to be capturing the lion's share of the attention. So this would be for the other side, in case anybody wants to use this idea for a little bit of media attention in the waning days of the protest. Here's what you do: you find some guy who's squatting at the park, you know, for justice or weed or whatever it is he's there for. Just go occupy his house and refuse to leave, or have homeless guys just go occupy his house, and then. You know, because he's obviously established that he's in favor of that sort of a thing. That you can just go sit somewhere and then refuse to be broomed along. So just go find some guys, maybe give him a can of Sterno to keep him occupied. Put him in his living room.
Occupied.
Everybody's happy. There you go. Bam. Done. Yeah.
A 16-year-old high school student from Wisconsin has won the 2011 LG U.S. National Texting Championship in New York and its cash prize of $50,000. Austin Wierschke says he sends out 400 to 500 texts per day on average, a habit he says his parents have come to terms with.
Never known the touch of a woman.
I'm very fortunate that they decided to get me unlimited texting.
Wow. Oh, that's great. We're not even halfway done with the first soundbite from this guy. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay. All right, hold on. I'm just going to stop that. We're going to start that from the beginning again.
Austin Wierschke.
That's wonderful. Okay.
I'm very fortunate that they decided to get me unlimited texting. And to that, I just want to thank my mom and dad, because if I didn't have unlimited texting, I would not be sitting here.
Well, we really can thank everybody for that, can't we? By the way, and lest you forget,
Dave,
and I'm sorry, I'm playing the long, playing the long version of that instead of the shortened version. In case anyone has forgotten,
shiny, a slang term for great use in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
Okay. Oh, I haven't heard that in a while.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Okay.
It was Wierschke's first time entering the annual contest.
I didn't really have a strategy. I just came in here like everyone else, just didn't know what to expect, I guess. And just to practice, I just texted all of my friends.
Shiny, a slang term for great use in the television series Firefly and the movie Serenity.
Okay. Wierschke explains how he plans to spend his money.
Oh, God, is this the third one?
Yes, it is.
All right. I think the third one is actually the same as the second one.
He looks a little like Justin Bieber, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it?
He looks kind of like a teen idol sort of a kid.
No, he doesn't.
He really does.
Where are you seeing his photo? His photograph?
On technewsdaily.com.
Oh, no, I don't think I have that. Let me see if I have the.
He's a surprisingly good-looking young man.
He's a relatively normal-looking youth.
He is.
All right. Yeah, I think I went to record the third soundbite, and I think there was nothing else there. So I think the third soundbite.
Let's see
is,
if it says in the story here how he plans to spend the money.
New headgear.
Oh, it even says in the story wearing a gray hoodie and sporting Justin Bieber hair. He went through each level of the competition accurately typing passages of text on a QWERTY keyboard. One round even included being blindfolded on stage and cranking out phrases by memory. It doesn't say how he plans to spend his $50,000.
And yet, still can't quite get the bra open.
Oh, well, you need more than just your thumbs for that.
What's happening over there?
It's just
chaos on
that
side of the room.
My computer is going dead, and I'm racing against time to get the power plugged in.
Are you really racing against? Is there a huge, like a big red timer counting down? You got to figure out which is the green wire and which is the red wire.
Well, I got that thing saying you only have 7% power left, and you know it's like.
Okay.
Okay, I have power again.
All right.
More or less. So that was Austin Wierschke.
You know, this is a thing. I guess it's probably increasing with every generation. It just advances exponentially. This ability to use your thumbs for things, because it's not even like the opposable thumb. It's like I see kids and it's always Asian kids for some reason sitting there in the airport you'll just see a whole panoply of human nature, just an entire sort of united colors of Benetton of the human experience. And it's like you'll see these Asian kids, and I swear to God, it's like they've got some robo-thumb that's been installed that actually is not just opposable, but sort of like rotates and swivels and like turns like 360 degrees in the socket. And they're just sort of like pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa-pa on the text thing. And I swear to God, they're doing like 700 words a minute or something. I mean, it's sort of astounding. And I think we're just going to have
it makes me feel very, very old, since I still just sort of, I poke at mine with my finger.
Well, and they've just got these stalk-like arms that end in a face hugger, each one of them. And so, I mean, which, good for them. I mean, clearly that is a marketable and applicable skill as we enter the 21st century.
We are evolving
beyond.
As a species.
So, some of us faster than the others, and by some of us, I mean Asians. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Here's Don Taylor.
Rick Perry said Wednesday he has no doubt that President Obama is an American citizen, comments that follow several suggestions from the GOP hopeful that he wasn't so sure that the man he hopes to face in the general election was born in the United States. In an interview with a local television news station in Florida, Perry downplayed his previous birther applause lines and said that people need to lighten up a little bit. "I don't think I was expressing doubts," he now says. "I was having some fun with Donald Trump."
Okay.
Perry caused a little bit of a stir this past weekend when Parade magazine published an interview with him in which the Texas governor said he had no reason to believe, and that's a direct quote, that Obama was born elsewhere, and he still wasn't positive that Obama's birth certificate is legitimate. "I don't have a definitive answer," he said. The full interview with TV station Bay News 9 set to air on Sunday. There was a clip released ahead of time, and Perry seems to have found a new way to channel Donald Trump, who quickly pivoted after Obama released his birth certificate earlier this year. Perry said in the interview, "Here's the more interesting thing. You know, let's lay out our income taxes. Let's lay out our college transcripts. Mine's been on the front page of the paper. If we're going to lay out all of these things, let's lay them out."
You know, Rick Perry seems like he reminds me of what's his name, Reggie from the Archie comics. You know?
Yeah, I can see that.
Just
yeah.
kind of a lantern jawed dick. You know, just seems a little too smug and a little too.
And he's Matthew McConaughey.
He just seems a little too. It's like this simultaneous like overweening confidence, yet at the same time like a sort of a mule like thick headedness going on there.
Well, kind of one of those guys. I mean, not unlike George Bush, if you think about it, who has just never really had any adversity, and things have always just gone his way.
Yawned his way to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Arguing that the election cycle has too many presidential debates, Rick Perry's top spokesman said, the Texas governor could use more time with voters instead of taking the stage with Republican opponents.
Wait, was he actually arguing that there were too many debates?
Yes.
Because that's funny.
His spokesman says that...
That's irony is what that is.
It would be better if he, was just talking to the regular people rather than discussing the pesky issues on stage with the other
But he's actually
opponents.
Arguing the point.
Yes.
That there are too many debates.
Arguing that there's too many debates.
Okay, all right.
It is ironic.
So this is what? Perry won?
Well, wait. This is Ray Sullivan, his spokesman.
Yeah.
He says there are better ways for Perry to use his time other than debating.
When you're talking about 18 more debates, particularly now as people are starting to think about heading to the polls, we're about 60 days away from votes being cast. The candidates need to spend time in Iowa doing those town halls, spending a lot more time with the voters, who oftentimes have the best questions and press the candidates the hardest.
If he doesn't show up to the debates, they should just get a Rick Perry doll where they pull the string. And then it just says, like insane birther crap. But they can preload it with things he's actually said in interviews. They can use real audio of him.
I like that.
That's a free idea.
Sullivan says debates are effective, but they can only accomplish so much.
There have been 8 Republican debates so far, 5 since Governor Perry got in. We certainly respect the process, but when you've got 8 or 9 candidates and 30 seconds to a minute, it takes valuable time away from campaigning in Iowa as those elections approach.
I certainly agree with that. I mean, the debates would be a lot more interesting to me if you didn't have the jerk moderator just sort of coming in and going, I'd like to remind you to keep your reply germane to the question that was asked and not to address your opponent directly. I mean, because that, like, what is the point of that?
Yeah.
You just want to see him like get in there and just slug it out for 60
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, you need the debates, but you need the debates with actual people there asking questions that are divisive, that are controversial, that are tough. And yeah, and allowing them to address each other's points so that they get that, your mom! You know, just start shaking their fists,
you know what they should have?
Stamping their feet.
They should get like some sort of a bipartisan.
Throwing things on the ground.
A bipartisan or independent. They should get somebody who doesn't plan to vote. Read me. And just a couple other people who have really don't care at all about the outcome, have no vested interest except that of comedy in whoever is elected president. And then they can just ensconce a panel of us there. And that panel will determine when you have, in fact, answered the question. Regardless of whatever your, you know, regardless what your answer is. Or
just
whether
a buzzer, and
yeah.
Then you're just done. That's
You know, so it's like, you know, whether your answer is off-putting or whether your answer alienates the crowd or whether your answer is obviously pandering, that doesn't matter. It'll just be like a weasel alert, you know? So like, because they ask the guy the question, they say, do you in fact eat the brains of children? And he says, I'm glad you brought up children today because they are our most precious natural resource. And we need to do whatever is necessary to make sure that children are there, not only in this generation, but in generations to come. And like at that point, you would just like you'd electrify his junk with some sort of a prod, and there would be a didn't answer the question alarm that would go off, and you get like three.
And
of
he'd
those.
Lose points.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. He would his tote board would trend down.
Well, a crabbing trip nearly turned deadly for three men after their boat capsized in the middle of the Columbia River. Last Friday, Ryan McClafferty, Kevin Neat, and Rick Rowe set off for a crabbing trip up near Warrington. The water was calm when they left the dock, but a storm blew in on their return trip. The waves capsized the boat and sent the men into the frigid water. Neat said, you're thinking about family. You're thinking about what you're going to do to survive. And honestly, I'm thinking this may be it. So first he's telling me what I'm thinking, and then he says what he's thinking. They floated for nearly 2 hours before spotting East Sand Island, a deserted island used as a bird research facility. They camped out in a hut overnight before getting help from the Coast Guard the next morning. McClafferty said, as soon as I saw the coastie wave back at me, tears filled my eyes. Just pure happiness. I knew we were okay.
Are they really
that we would get out of there.
Coasties?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay.
And Rose said, I have a different respect for life.
Okay.
Apparently, he already had respect for life, but he has a different one.
It's green now.
Yes. All three say they will be back on the boat one day, but this time with a life jacket strapped on the entire
God,
time.
Oh, God, really? Are you kidding me?
That's what it says.
I think earlier in the story, they could have mentioned that they... Then I would have...
Yeah. If they had a little more pity for them.
If they had said this in the first paragraph, that they weren't wearing life jackets, then I wouldn't have wasted all this energy caring about the rest of the story. I would have gone like, well, jagoffs get what jagoffs get. You know, suck that, says nature.
Yeah. And the crabs laugh.
Listener Andy says, sometimes when I listen to the opening of Legion of News, I catch myself speaking along, which isn't that bad on its own, but I seem to inadvertently always say, Legion of Jews.
Hmm.
Okay. There's no follow-up given there or any context.
That's really your issue,
yeah,
Andy,
that's
not ours.
More of a YP, Andy. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to...
I mean, thank you for sharing.
Thanks for giving me a benchmark by which I can judge my own insensitivity to others.
Yes.
I appreciate it.
By the way, which reminds me, we have talked about race and racism and words.
Have we?
Words that sound racist on this and other shows many times. I am currently playing two different games of Words with Friends.
Oh, God.
With Thomas Gill. And when I signed on last night, I swear to God, it shows you the list of all the games you have going and what everyone has played. Like, you know, Rick Emerson played Evacuate.
Right.
For X-Men. First two, Thomas Gill played Nip for 6 points. Thomas Gill played Jig for 8 points.
Okay, that is pretty great. It's the double punch there that really makes it work.
Yes.
It's the 1-2.
And I was like, wow, did he do that on purpose? Probably not, but...
I think we know the answer to that.
Yes.
I don't know the answer to that.
No. Let's do our science news.
By the way, Andy has clarified... Quote, hey, I have Jewish friends. I like Jewish people. And hey, there's really no justification I can make here that doesn't dig the hole deeper, is there? No. No,
no.
There really isn't.
And honestly, sometimes, let's admit it, sometimes it is funny to insert the word Jews. Like the Cars song, What I Like About You, when you say, what I like about Jews, they really know how to dance. That's fun.
It's a... Jew equals comedy.
It does.
Not only literally, but figuratively as well. Here's your science. On the march. Or, I swear to God, I almost just said Jews on the march. But then it's like, that just sounds...
That's an entirely different segment.
Yeah, that just seems... That really does seem inappropriate somehow. Here's Don Taylor at the News Desk Video. Science on the march for...
Research in motion.
just not done in... Not done introing the segment. Just...
Okay.
Thursday, October 27th, 2011.
It's Thursday, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Research in Motion's recent BlackBerry service failure has plenty of people speculating about whether the smartphone maker will be able to survive, but the company is now facing a more immediate problem. It's being sued over the outages. Reuters reports that the company now faces class action suits in both Canada, its home country, and the United States over the network failure that frustrated customers on five continents. The suits allege that Research in Motion violated its contract with clients by failing to compensate them adequately for the disruptions. Informa Telecom and Media estimated that RIM could face up to $25 million in payments over the outages, according to BBC. While the total may not break the bank for the tech company, the suits and accompanying press coverage likely won't help the company as it tries to turn the page and regain its footing in an increasingly competitive and Apple-dominated smartphone market.
The best part is, so that big outage they had like 3 weeks ago, the way that they compensated, quote, compensated, end quote, their customers is to give them $100 credits for more BlackBerry crap.
They
didn't, because they, people had like all of this massive downtime, not just here, but like in Asia and Europe and around, circling the globe. And BlackBerry said, look, I know all of our products have turned into garbage over the last few years, but here's $100 toward the purchase, which doesn't actually buy you anything except like part of your next BlackBerry, which you undoubtedly don't want at this point.
It's like the whole Little Caesars double pizza deal.
Exactly.
It's horrible, but you get twice as much.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, they're pointing out that the $25 million is not a huge amount of money for the company as far as revenue is concerned, but the biggest damage is to its brand, and they were already suffering, and this could really, really deal it a bad blow. Astronomers finally know why the first documented supernova was supersized. The exploded star was observed by the ancient Chinese in the year 185 and visible for 8 months. It was later found to be a bigger-than-expected supernova remnant 8,000 light years away. Each light year is about 6 trillion miles. New observations in the infrared show the explosion took place in a cavity in space. The cavity allowed the stellar shrapnel to shoot faster and farther out into the universe. The star, which was similar to our sun, died peacefully and turned into a dense white dwarf. It sucked up material from another star and then exploded in a supernova. NASA announced the findings on Monday. 4 space telescopes were used in the study. So is this one of those things where they're actually able to use telescopes to look, like, way back into the past to see what happened?
I don't know what it means when they say that.
I don't understand that at all.
This telescope can look back to the beginning of the universe, which I know makes sense, I guess, to somebody, but not to me. I don't really know what that means.
I realize that's like asking the wrong person.
That's like saying I can use a telescope to look back to yesterday to see where my car keys are. Like, I don't really know how that actually happens.
Well, on November 11th, the entire planet will get thousands of hours of fame via the One Day on Earth project. For 24 hours, the Earth's population is invited to contribute to the second One Day on Earth film and media event. Everyone will have the opportunity to post onto the project's website and mark their contribution on an interactive map. Only a select few, however, will make it into the feature film. The project started in 2008 after project founder Kyle Ruddick witnessed musicians from around the world come together to create tonal harmony at the World Festival of Sacred Music. He was inspired to do the same thing with film. Last year, the One Day on Earth film Shared the World Story filmed on October 10th, 2010, and was a success at international film festivals. Ruddick said on the project's website, "We created media with participants in every country of the world contributing. Over 60 nonprofit organizations participated, and we collectively created over 3,000 hours of video. To participate this year, the project's sponsors invite the Earth's population to sign up on the One Day on Earth webpage and get your cameras ready for November 11th. All people are welcome to participate," Ruddick says. "The greater the quality and quantity of participation, the greater our impact on humanity."
I don't even have time to watch what's on my TiVo, frankly. And the idea of 7 billion people all just recording, like a bunch of, FaceTime messages or something. I really don't know when I'm going to find the requisite number of hours to watch that.
Well, it is going to happen on 11-11-11. So that's happening. Also happening on 11-11-11, by the way.
Is this compensation for yesterday?
What? Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm making up. Because I didn't realize it yesterday I was wrong. This is Spinal Tap. Burton Fat Boy posting. So you can go see that. On 11-11. Because it's 11. Get it? Anyway.
Ha!
It's humor. And finally in our science, Japanese auto giant Nissan is aiming to sell 1.5 million electric vehicles around the world by 2016, according to the company. They look to capitalize on growing demand for green products. Japan's second largest automaker behind Toyota said it wants to be the world's largest player in so-called zero-emission vehicles, including a new fuel cell electric vehicle developed with Daimler. The company, which is 43.8% owned by French partner Renault, has sold 15,000 Leaf electric cars, the only model it produces, but plans to add a further 7 models across the group. Chief Executive Officer Carlos Ghosn said, "More consumers are demanding products in line with their values, including cars and trucks with a lower carbon footprint. At the same time, we are using technology to make our factories greener and more efficient." In addition to target of 1.5 million electric vehicles, the company said it is also aiming for an average 35% improvement in fuel economy on 2005 figures for vehicles sold in Japan.
Okay, I'd like to propose right now that either people who just seem to have some overweening tendency toward buying earth-friendly or so-called green products, you know, often for appearance's sake or for show, as documented by the Freakonomics guys, either people who have a tendency to just be very, very easily marketed to when it comes to earth-friendly products, or chicks who are more likely to do you because they think you care about dolphins and whales and seals and leaves and trees, called leaf blowers.
I like that.
There you go.
I like
that's
that.
A Rick Emerson original right here. I don't have that. I used to have this sound effect that was sort of a copyright 2010 or whatever. I don't really have that, but that's right now you heard me create that leaf blower.
I was looking at the dairy products in my fridge last night, noticing how many of them now have that label on it saying that they were produced by cows.
Cows were not jabbed with syringes.
Yeah, they don't get, like, human growth hormone or whatever it is. They're not turning them into...
They don't even take the anthrax out of the cows anymore. They just let them have it.
Super cows or something.
Yeah.
And I had that moment where I think of them sometimes as Rick Emerson moments, where, like, you were talking about, you know, all of the chemicals in your shampoo and that
yes.
sort of thing. And I was just looking at it and realizing, I suppose that's one of those things I should care about, and I really don't. I yeah. notice the thing is on the milk, and I say, well, good for you, milk. And it makes absolutely no difference to whether I would purchase that or a different
no.
brand at all.
No, especially because you basically live in a planet that's just a cesspool of chemicals anyway.
Yeah.
Really, your milk isn't going to extend or decrease your lifespan at all.
I mean, I have a broken tailpipe. If I drive anywhere that takes more than like a half an hour, the inside of my car is filled with carbon monoxide.
Just killing off brain cells by the millions coming
yeah.
to work.
So the stuff in my milk is really the least of my problems.
Also, by the way, you know, like you're skipping the antibiotics in your milk or whatever to drive here so you can drink bourbon all day in the studio. So, I mean, it's a wash, sister. There's just no...
I think the bourbon is what keeps my system clean.
No, it burns out the infection.
It's killing all the bad stuff.
That is a scientific fact. And with that, we end your Science on the March for Thursday, October 27th, 2011. Coming up later in this hour, entertainment news, and then next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today, Hick Watch, Clergy Watch, Penis Watch, and more. Don't forget, if you have not yet gotten your Geek-O-Lantern entry in, you got to do that now. You got basically a day and a half or so, give or take, to do that. You got to get it in by the end of the Rick Emerson Show tomorrow. That is the end of the day at the front of the 28th. You can go to geekolantern.com and you can see the latest entries. So I have not checked this morning, but as of yesterday, there was the... Had we posted yesterday the one that was the Yoda? Was the Yoda up
yes.
yesterday? Because I think we talked
yes.
about that. So there's Yoda, there's Flexo, there's the Don't Tase Me Bro, and you can see all of last year's entries as well. Plus, you can see the prizes that are up there for grabs from Think Geek, including the Star Trek pizza cutter and the plush talking Jawa, also the drunken talking walking bender.
Oh, we now have one that says, "Why so serious?"
Oh, that's right. So that
yes.
so that one, I think, just got put up at the end of yesterday. So you get your entries to geekolantern@rickemerson.com or contest@rickemerson.com. Email those in, and we will announce the winners next week. So mm-hmm. that's at geekolantern.com.
And great prizes, by the way. Click on the thing that says prizes, and you can see the awesome prizes that ThinkGeek is giving
us. It really
us.
Is true.
A lawyer for Stephen Blaylock, charged with murdering his wife Lori's disappearance, has told jurors that... Okay, a lawyer for Stephen Blaylock told jurors that Blaylock fought back to defend himself after his wife attacked him in a drunken rage. However, Deschutes County District Attorney Patrick Flaherty said Wednesday in his opening statement that if Blaylock took the beating he claims, police photos would have shown it. And the prosecutor said jurors would see only a tiny scratch on the man's right cheek. Blaylock is accused of murdering his wife and disposing of her body in the North Santiam River. Her body was never found. He initially told police his wife walked away from the couple's home on the evening of October 28, 2010. She was reported missing November 2nd when she failed to show up for work. The trial is expected to last as long as 4 weeks. A walk through an apple orchard proved to be no picnic for a Massachusetts couple.
Really?
That's what it says. That got lost at Honey Pot Hill Orchards in Stowe, Vermont.
Honey Pot Hill.
Honey Pot Hill Orchards.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And best name for a sex club ever, by
Seriously.
The way. Seriously. Andrew Martin, who owns the orchard, with his sister, Julie Martin Sullivan, said it was getting dark out when the couple wandered across the orchard. He said they just started wandering while picking apples. They ended up in an obscure part of the orchard. They called the police, but we found them. They were about 3/4 of a mile from where they started. Making matters worse was the couple's unfamiliarity with the orchard. It was their first visit to Honey Pot Hill. said Martin.
Well, they were in college at the time. That's when you do those things.
They felt bad, he said, but those things happened to the best of us. But it all worked out. They did the right thing. It was getting cold out. The incident follows on the heels of an incident in Danvers on October 11th when another couple called 911 after getting lost in the corn maze at Connor's farm. From the police log for the orchard call, the 911 call, it says, caller reporting himself and his wife are lost in an orchard and can't find their way out. Described area as a large field with picnic tables, volleyball net, and red shack that has a sign on it with school group check-in. That's where they were lost, by the way.
Are they related?
A large field with picnic tables.
Are they related? That's not being lost. That's just being... Are they like kin somehow to the idiots that were calling the cops because they couldn't find their way out of the corn maze?
Yeah, that's what they just said.
But it seems like they're cut from the same cloth.
They
like
are indeed.
The dispatcher who was making them bark like a dog or whatever, so the canine unit could find them.
Say, canine, here, canine.
I don't think that's being lost. I think that's just being somewhere other than where your car is parked.
Yes.
So, I mean, it seems by that definition, I'm lost right now.
I mean, you know, I was lost for 45 minutes at Disneyland that way once.
Like
so.
You just, you know, like you got
to... I remembered, I'm parked in Dopey.
Duck into the mall to buy a pair of shoes. You're not lost. You're just standing at the Payless shoe store. Yeah. It's not the same thing, really.
No.
Okay. Jesus.
An Orange County, California doctor has been indicted on charges he illegally prescribed addictive opiate painkillers to people he barely knew at meetings he arranged at local cafes.
Well, of course you barely know. If you know people long enough, you're going to realize that really, of course they shouldn't have drugs.
Alvin Mingchek Yee, 43, of Mission Viejo, was arrested Tuesday at his Irvine office where he is a general practitioner by local and federal narcotics agents. Over the course of a year, Yee allegedly met with people every night at Starbucks coffee shops.
Did Yee?
And in exchange for cash, provided them prescriptions for various opiate painkillers, including OxyContin, Vicodin, Xanax, and Adderall. In a search warrant affidavit, a federal agent wrote that he observed Yee selling at Starbucks to people between 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. Starbucks baristas that the agent interviewed said they also saw Yee dispensing prescriptions. Pharmacists in the area said in interviews that they refused to honor Yee's prescriptions because, quote, they considered them outside the scope of a professional practice and without a legitimate medical purpose.
Because he was just handing them by the fistful out of, like, his gym bag while sitting at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Okay.
And apparently all the local pharmacies knew about it.
Although, let's be honest.
Like, no, we don't take this.
It's not like your doctor really does anything more than that. He just does it in a nicer office.
Yeah. A third of the prescriptions Yee allegedly wrote were for people aged 25 and younger. People arrested with large... because when you're over 25, you've got health insurance and you get all that stuff from a real doctor.
Do you?
Come on. I do.
Okay.
You know? You go, ow, I'm in pain. And they say, here you go. And then they bill, Kaiser, and you're good. People arrested with large amounts of the drugs in cities such as Seattle, Phoenix, and Detroit told officers they had traveled to Orange County to buy their drugs from Yee.
Okay, well, that's just stupid, though. There's really no need to. There's probably a guy within two blocks of your home, wherever you are, they can just take care of that. Or a high schooler. They've got access to those things.
Well, this is interesting. They said abuse of prescription opiate painkillers is at record levels in many parts of the country. Addicts and public health workers say many of those who abuse the expensive painkillers later switch to cheaper heroin to supply their habits.
I didn't think heroin was cheaper. Well, I guess maybe there's no copay there, but maybe it's that the dosages are smaller. What were the drugs he was giving out? What was the list?
OxyContin, Vicodin, what else was it? Xanax.
Okay.
I mean, if you're buying them on the street, then yeah, I think when it comes down to, 10 or 20 pills is going to probably be more expensive than just buying some heroin.
Well, I guess, because it's like they're passing along the marketing cost to you and, and it's like those pens they give out at the medical conferences that say Vicodin on the side with like a big smiley face or whatever.
Where can I get one of those?
Seriously, no, here's the thing. So my wife just came back from a medical conference in Baltimore, and she came back, and it's like, I remember my mom doing this because everybody can just fill in their own edible comments here, because my mom... Not unlike my sister and my wife, nurses. So I remember, when I was growing up, my mom would have all this jazz that they would give, the drug companies would give them a handout, at the hospital or wherever, whatever seminar she had to go to.
My mom was a nurse, yeah. I had a lot of that stuff around the house, too.
And, like, everything I wore when I was a kid said, like, cefazoxin on it. And it's like, I don't even know what that is. It's just like, but it's like wearing to gym class, like a heart medication shirt or something. So Lara comes back from Baltimore. First of all, you know the thing they're giving out now at a lot of medical conferences? Hand sanitizer. But it it's like, but the thing is, it's like hand sanitizer, like I've never even seen. Like, there's this one that it's sort of a, it's a spray Purell. Purell makes a spray product. It is like an aerosol version of their gel.
Really?
Where it's not quite a spray. It's not quite an aerosol like a Banaka stuff or like stuff you spray your eyeglasses with. But it's not quite a gel. It's somewhere in between. It's like a viscous spray that then vanishes after you rub it on your hands. And then it comes in this thing that is squarish and flat and fits in your pocket like a credit card. It's amazing. I'll bring it in.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
So she got like 9 of those. And then, of course, more than anything else, they love to give out pens and Post-it notes. Then that have, you know, like the brand name and then the long scientific name underneath.
Yeah, every pad of Post-it notes and every notepad we had in my house when I was growing up had the name of some kind of cream for some rash or another.
Totally, which is always just like equal parts fascinating and awkward. But those things don't pay for themselves, so no. It seems like you really got to pass the cost along to the customer when he goes to buy his Vicodin or his Xanax or his whatever.
One of my very favorite coffee cups I have at home, I bought for 50 cents at a Goodwill, and it's one of those drug company giveaway coffee cups advertising Xanax.
Yeah.
And it says Xanax on one side, and on the other side of the coffee mug, it says for anxiety and depression.
And the best part is that they're giving you a drug, they're marketing a drug for anxiety on the side of a coffee cup, which is
right.
The thing that produces anxiety and jitteriness in the first place. So that's sort of a...
Indeed.
That's sort of a nice self-replicating situation. If you go to maybe you shouldn't be buying, your opiates from a guy at a Starbucks, I guess, theoretically. But it's not like it's any different when you go to the doctor. I mean, all you do is you go, what seems to be ailing you? I got a pain. Okay, then. And then he's like a guy at the bulk candy store who just reaches behind with like a scoop and just whoosh, like right out of a barrel. And he goes, all right, then, we have, Vicodin all around then, and just into a tub, you know? Or it's like that thing... Do you ever get the sense that they're not counting your pills in the back? They just weigh them? Because they do that thing of, like, the tilty sort of scale where the pills get dumped into it and it just sort of...
They probably do. It'd be a lot faster. Because
like weighing
that way,
money?
You just punch in a number and it's like, this is how much the Vicodin weighs, and then you'd get that many.
It always makes me feel like a junkie, though, like I am somehow getting my drugs in bulk, which I guess I am, so...
But doesn't it feel good, though, when you get that big, giant bottle of everything and it's
it
all
does.
Fresh and new?
It does. No, it really...
does.
There are a few better feelings than that when you get the... we were talking about the joy of getting a brand new computer or operating system because you fire it up for the first time and you say, this is the fastest this computer's ever going to run. It's just lightning fast. And then when you get to... And especially if you get the largest bottle that just has that good solid weight in the palm of your hand, and you say to yourself, this bottle is absolutely full of drugs. Not that I do that sort
of
thing.
I have nothing to worry about for at least 30 days.
Exactly. All my cares and woes have been tranquilized, all my needs sated, all my anxieties remedied. Until 11:27:11. And then my life becomes a living hell once again. But until then, I'm fantastic. Am I ever? Here's Don Taylor.
That's your entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Thursday, October 27th.
Things continue to be sunny for Caitlin Olsen and Rob McElhenney. The couple and co-stars on FX's It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia are expecting their second child together. Olsen gave birth to their son Axel Lee just 13 months ago. Olsen told People magazine, "We're having a boy. We're so happy that Axel gets to have a brother so close in age, and I get to add another set of balls to my very, very male world." The estranged father of actress Lindsay Lohan is back in police custody Thursday. That would be today. Hours after having been released from a Tampa jail on domestic violence charges. Tampa police responded to a 911 call from Michael Lohan's on-and-off girlfriend early today. Kate Major told police that Lohan made a harassing phone call to her shortly after being released from jail on Wednesday afternoon. Lohan called again while police were at Major's condo. Major 28 put the call on speaker so police could listen. After hearing what Lohan said, the police department notified the Hillsborough County State Attorney's Office of a violation of the pre-trial release orders that he stay away from Major, and an arrest order was authorized.
Okay.
Police went to the Tahitian Inn in Tampa.
Sounds classy.
Where Lohan was reportedly staying. According to a news release from police, Lohan spotted the officers and jumped off a third-floor balcony in an attempt to escape.
How did that work out for him?
He was arrested after a short pursuit on foot.
Okay, all right.
And is in jail.
Pity he didn't damage something.
Yeah. I have a sound and a photo in the Dropbox for you.
Okay, I'll get that loaded here in a second.
Okay.
By the way, we should note that listener Sparkle Raven says, Sparkle Raven, really?
Sparkle Raven.
Who is allegedly a man, says, my doctor's office gave me a Viagra pen. It's about 3 times thicker than a regular pen, FYI, just in case you're wondering. Oh, and they have those. The other thing is, have you seen the pens that look like syringes? Those are awesome. Those are fantastic. It's a pen. It's a ballpoint pen, but you click it in the end, but it is totally the plunger. It's like a syringe.
Yeah, I have seen that.
And then
yeah.
You click the plunger to get the little ballpoint thing out.
Robert Wagner on Twitter, by the way, corrected me and said that what I like about Jews is by the Romantics, not the Cars.
Oh, fail.
I always think that's a Cars song.
Okay.
Sister Wives stars Cody and Robin Brown welcomed their first child together on Wednesday, according to People. Solomon weighed in at 9 pounds, 10.5 ounces, and is 22 inches long. He's perfect, and we couldn't be happier, Cody told the magazine. We are so thrilled. Solomon is Cody's 17th child, three of which are Robin's children from a previous marriage. The practicing polygamist has 3 other wives, and he married Robin during last season's finale of the TLC series. The entire family recently moved to Nevada from Utah after that state's police began to investigate their lifestyle. Patrice O'Neill, the actor-comedian who recently was part of the Comedy Central roast of Charlie Sheen, suffered a stroke last week. According to E! Online, fellow comic Jim Norton announced the news during the Opie and Anthony radio show, which O'Neill often frequents on Wednesday morning. Norton told the hosts and listeners of the program, we don't know how he is, we don't know how he's going to be. I didn't want to do this by myself. I wish we had more news for you.
Not like a stroke of genius.
No. O'Neill hosted VH1's Web Junk 2020 and was featured on The Office.
Funnily enough, that's exactly how it's going to sound after you have a stroke someday.
Yeah, well, there's not much of a jump for me there. No. But he's terrific, and I actually feel bad about that.
I actually don't know. I don't know who it is, which is why I can be crass.
Oh, okay. No, he's very funny. He's a very funny man. Okay, Steven Tyler's past is rearing its head once more. The Aerosmith frontman and American Idol judge has been open about his battle with drugs and alcohol. And while he's been clean and sober for some time now, his bizarre and unexpected shower fall this week nevertheless raised a couple of eyebrows among his fans. So this morning he phoned into the Today Show, where Matt Lauer cut right to the chase. And here we go.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was distracted by this photograph. Yeah. Let me drop the sound here.
We do have a photograph of what he looked like after he passed out and fell down in the shower and broke out a couple of teeth.
All right, so this is Steven Tyler.
As some of your fans see these pictures this morning, they're going to have questions about whether this was a fall in the shower or a fall off the wagon. Would you address that for me?
I love the way you put that. You know, being in the program that I'm in, it's something that we have to accept. I went public with my problems only to address them straight on. So, you know, people thinking that is natural and normal. We flew last night from Paraguay after that incident, and we're in, where are we now? Argentina for 2 hours, and if anybody knew anybody that used substances, they wouldn't be up the hour after having a talk with Matt Lauer and the rest of America. But, it's nothing that I don't understand. I get that people think that. It still bothers me a little, but it's something I have to deal with for the rest of my life.
He said what happened was that he had suffered from Montezuma's revenge and was dehydrated and not feeling well, and it caused him to pass out in the shower, which resulted in 4 stitches to his eyes, some reparative plastic surgery, and 2 dental implants, all of which were done at what he called a one-stop shop hospital that was referred to him by the U.S. Embassy.
By the way, I got to tell you, this, you know, you really got stones if you're Steven Tyler and you call a guy in to take a photograph of your face right here knowing that it's going to be all over the internet. That's to me,
that is not a pretty photo.
No, I mean, but this is like the biggest evidence to me. First of all, he does sound amazingly together in the phone call there. And I did not believe, and not because I have some like, you know, some like false belief in the porcelain feet of my rock and roll heroes or whatever. But just because, I don't know, because he's 62 and people fall. I mean, it just things happen. Yeah. But he's always been open about, when like he and Joe Perry would be trying to stay clean and then they get in a room and just do a pound of blow or something instead. But like, if you ever doubted that Steven Tyler has like absolute confidence in himself and has long ago gotten over whatever issues he may ever have had about his unorthodox appearance, I mean, the idea that he's just like, take a picture of it, and he's just, and it's, I mean, he looks terrible. He looks like all the bad things that have ever happened to anyone on earth, like all just sort of coagulated and concentrated onto one face.
Yes, indeed.
Jesus.
Yeah, he said that he was in the shower, got nauseous, started to get sick, and then just fell on his face, passed out and woke up later. They were, he got everything fixed up. They were back on the road within days. And he said to Matt Lauer, short of having my legs taken off, people are going to expect me on stage no matter what. It's all about playing to the people. We rocked out. Not only did I break my face, but we broke a house record. So life is beautiful, Matt.
Awesome. You go, Steven Tyler.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Wonderful.
And that's entertainment news.
All right. There you go. There's your entertainment news for Thursday, October 27th, 2011. Fantastic. Wonderful.
Steve Jobs biographer Walter Isaacson says the Apple impresario was convinced he would beat his cancer right up until his death. Isaacson says every time the cancer would mutate, Jobs would search for the ability to stop it.
Even though he was facing his mortality, even though even before he had cancer, he used to talk about life being an arc, you're born and you die. I think that that magical, optimistic thinking he had up until the end, he thought he was going to beat the cancer.
Isaacson said that with the many specialized treatments Jobs received, Jobs thought he could be the first person to outrun the cancer by staying one step ahead of it.
Up until almost the end, he thought he was going to stay, as he put it, one lily pad ahead of the cancer, because he was doing targeted therapy based on gene sequencing, and every time the cancer would mutate, he'd find a new bullet or a new way to stop it.
Well, as I think many people have said, this is one of the things when Seamus and I were sort of emailing about it the night that, that the news came out about Jobs dying. That really is one of the big ball punches of the whole story, is that Steve Jobs, who has more resources at his disposal, he had more money, access to better doctors. He was able to get a transplant. I mean, if that guy. You want to talk about a guy that has an in with the scientific and technological community. I don't really think you could have found a better scenario in which you would have received the best treatment available to man. I mean, if you just show up and you're like, hey, I created Apple computers. I need a little bit of help over here with my genes. Could you please? If that guy isn't able to beat cancer, then it's like, what hope does anybody else have? You know?
Now, when I was a kid, my mom worked at UCLA Medical Center. And at one point, fairly well publicized, John Wayne was in there getting various treatments for his cancer. And that was one of those cases where, you get a really good idea of, just how unbeatable cancer can be. Because he was spending every penny that he had to try every single therapy that was available. He was even apparently even going down to Mexico because it wasn't legal in the U.S. and going and getting gold injections in Mexico.
Right.
And no.
Yeah.
And
so
if you're John Wayne, and cancer still gets you.
I mean, because you figure, because there was that whole thing too, where it's like Jobs is on the brink of death, and then he came back and he's like, I'm fine, and I think everybody sort of thought. Of course, it was like that moment of Gus Fring walking out of the explosion before he died, where you went, of course he's fine. He's Steve Jobs. What were we thinking?
I do like the quote, though, where they said that he said he was saying one lily pad ahead of the cancer. I like the idea that in his mind, cancer was just this elaborate game of Frogger.
Well, I mean, he did seem to have this. The thing about Steve Jobs is, like, you see any interview he ever gave, and he just had this gleam in his eye, like he kind of knew something the rest of us sort of didn't. And I know that it's always tempting to overly romanticize the dead and all, but that was always the case. It's like he always just seemed to have. He was like some sort of elf from the Keebler techno kitchen, where he seemed to have some sort of innate understanding of some kind of like bizarre witchery that the rest of us did not have access to. But then again, it's like wheat before the sickle. We all apparently are in the face of cancer, so that's no good. Incidentally, I got that Steve Jobs biography, so it came out Tuesday, Monday.
Yeah,
something like that came out this week. Anyway, so I had that overnight delivered to my house from Amazon, where it sits unopened, untouched, unmolested. The spine, haven't even cracked the cover right now. I'm going to wait until I'm on vacation. Just going to read them. So this is my whole, because the whole deal with me being gone is that, because I didn't make any of those arrangements. I've got people for that. And so I just, I told Laura, I said, the deal is that, you just pick wherever we're going and just tell me, like, when we get to the airport or whatever. And I think she ended up telling me, I think she told me the name of the town, but I've since forgotten it. But she's done this a couple of times where it's like, I won't know where we're going on vacation until we get to the airport. And I think the last time was just, I don't know, it was like San Francisco or someplace. But apparently, so the deal is that my cell phone won't work there, and I don't have internet access. So so instead, I am taking a stack of books like this high. So that's going to be, and the first one is going to be that Steve Jobs. And I instructed her that there are to be no activities or events planned for like 80% of the time we're there. So that's just going to be me sitting in a chair, like wherever we end up being, and getting through as many books as possible.
So you're just going to be sitting there reading, and occasionally you're going to hear that, she's like ziplining over your head doing
Seriously.
Something. And
yeah. And she's like paragliding over a volcano.
Have a good time, honey. Try not to die.
Yeah. And I'll just, you know, then I'll snap my fingers and a small man will appear and hand me a drink becrusted with salt.
Nice. Well, a man was charged with false reporting when he called in a robbery to Colorado Springs police after his girlfriend and a Craigslist acquaintance arrived at his apartment at the same time. At 3:13 a.m., officers were called to the Village 7 fourplex on a report of a burglary in progress. Five officers arrived at the apartment where 24-year-old Kevin Gaylor, a resident at the complex, reported the robbery. Shortly after arriving, police learned that actually what had happened was that a woman from Denver, Colorado, who had only just met Gaylor on Craigslist, was coming to visit him at his apartment when his girlfriend unexpectedly arrived home. When the woman arrived, Gaylor called the police and reported an attempted robbery. So he basically tried to convince his girlfriend that the woman
was there to burgle
was
him.
A burglar.
Okay. She was there to steal his essence.
Yeah. Gaylor was taken into custody and later released. He was charged with false reporting to authorities, a misdemeanor. Okay. And I would imagine probably is not doing too well with the girlfriend at this point either.
Hey, apparently we made some joke that was too soon earlier, about 9 minutes ago. Apparently, this is from Cheryl. She says, this is at 12:48, though, so I don't know what it was. She just said, oh, that just elicited a groan from my mom. Too soon. What did we say at 12:48 that was too soon?
Well, I think you might have said something about Patrice O'Neill and his stroke.
Oh, stroke of genius.
Yeah, there you
Maybe
go.
Maybe that was too soon.
That might have been too
All
soon.
All right, got it. Okay.
Yeah. Do we have time for another story?
Oh,
or are we done now?
Wait, well, we would have, but wait. No, wait. No, wait. Okay, now we're done. All right, and with that, we bring to a close this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network over the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, is where we loom like a big looming thing. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Cyber Wizard Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Eckler, and chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening, and we will see you next hour at rickemersonshow.com, where we have a hick watch, clergy watch, penis watch, and more. And we'll see you again tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Till then, have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?